Get a computer repair business website up and running, starting from scratch, even if you don't know anything about website design. Check out the new Tech Site Builder 2. Save 20% by going to techsitebuilder.com/Linux.
Hello, everybody. This is Door to Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. Wanted to just slip in a quick note here. I want to apologize for the quality of this podcast. We had a little issue with our local recording, so I had to do the fallback measure, which is download the YouTube audio, try to clean it up as best of my ability, and publish it as a show. Once again, I apologize for the quality of this show, and I thank everybody for their support.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 137. This is a show about Linux. We talk about hardware, software, anything that tickles our Linux fancy. I am, of course, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am joined once again by my good friend, the Linux Maven, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Hey, Mr. Coop. I guess it's going okay, except for the torrential humidity in this area. Besides that, it's good.
I'm feeling it. We're on opposite ends of the country, but it's like the same. Yeah, I dealt with that all day. And I did get out and do some yard work, and all the weather is just, it's closing in. But thank God for AC window units and large box fans.
Yes. Besides the lack of computers and any kind of functional technology that we know today, I'm really happy I wasn't alive like 100 years ago. The lack of AC refrigerators, I think would have went insane. I think I would have been the local guy in the town that everybody just threw rocks at because he's nuts.
Chilling beer would have been more difficult.
Yeah, warm beer. You had a choice, no beer or warm beer.
I drink with the warm beer. Alcohol is alcohol when it comes down to it.
Yeah.
I've been at those parties where it's like, well, what do you have left? It's like, well, I got some gin and I got a shoelace and I have a half an orange. It's like, okay, we're going to make this work. You know, you got to get a MacGyver at some time. If some guy goes, well, I got a mug and I got a gallon of warm beer, I'm like, well, get out of the way. Give me the mug.
You know? Yes, but I also try to convince someone to go on a beer run.
Yeah, yeah.
Have to do my part to help sustain the party. Really quick, basic, and it's not really actually going to be quick, but it's quick like a dagger, I'm going to say.
Whoa.
There's more than a couple people out there who I really do like. And I really do respect, but I believe they are, for the most part, completely wrong in some of the things they say. They basically say how they do not like Ubuntu, but they like Mint, or they like Pingai, or they like Peppermint, or they like Zorin, or they like all these other distros that are based upon Ubuntu.
Other derivatives.
Yes, and I will say I absolutely 100% understand, comprehend, rationalize, and equate to their level of understanding on what they actually mean. And I'll put it like this, what they hate is the Ubuntu experience. The act of sitting down to a Ubuntu install and trying to do what they need to do. Understand that's not what Ubuntu is. That's only what your end user experience is. Okay. If you use Mint, the de facto standard fact is you're using Ubuntu. If you're using Zorin, you're using Ubuntu. If you're using Pingai, you're using Ubuntu. If you're using Peppermint, you're using Ubuntu. You're using Bodhi, you're using Ubuntu. Okay. In the real world, if my mother is a white person and my father is a white person, inheritance then dictates I'm going to come out a white person. Okay. Inheritance is one of the laws of nature that we have to basically adhere to. Of course, until we get into genetic engineering, which I don't know how far off that is, but in the Linux world, instead of two people making a offspring, it's more like a unisexer worm that can have sex with itself, and offspring can come shooting off. Inheritance is still a major factor, When you run Mint or Zorin or Pengai or Bodhi and you come across a Ubuntu tutorial or a Ubuntu step-by-step or anything Ubuntu, as long as it's not dealing with the Unity interface, it is all 100% accurate because you're running Ubuntu. Don't talk bad about a company, about not wanting to support a company, but you're more than willing to support this guy or this girl or this small group of people who support that company. That is what we call hypocritical. And granted, America is the land of hypocrisy. We probably do more hypocritical things on a day-to-day than most other countries, I believe. That doesn't mean we have to keep doing it. And I'll say, I'll take it another step further. Ubuntu is derived from Debian, okay? Mint didn't come out of thin air. They took Ubuntu and they put what I'm going to call elbow grease into it. They didn't do any magic. They didn't do anything special. They didn't do anything unbelievable. They put elbow grease into it. They put time into it. They put some code into it that made the end user experience a little bit better. Same thing can be said about Ubuntu itself. They took Debian, they put in a little bit of elbow grease. They didn't change what Debian is. Debian is Debian is Debian. They put a little elbow grease into it. They added a thing called PPAs. They added a thing called Unity. They're adding a thing called Mir. They're adding these other things into it with elbow grease, okay? To a huge, outstandingly obtuse degree, anything you can do in Zorin, in Pengai, in Bodhi, in Peppermint, in Mint, you can do in Debian. The only difference is the amount of work you have to put into it. So with that, I'll say Debian is all those other distributions minus the elbow grease, which means if you want that same level of experience, you yourself have to put the elbow grease in. So that's where we get to make choice. That's why choice is great. If you want greater control, if you want greater control on what the outcome is on your desktop, then you go back a step. If you were using Mint and you want more control, go back to Ubuntu. If you're using Ubuntu and you want more control, go back to Debian. If you want more control than Debian, that's where... you already know plenty enough. I salute you. You know what to go do next. Linux from scratch, Arch, Gen 2, all these other things. But I'm begging people out there, stop bad-mouthing a company when you are supporting them by supporting distros based upon them. That is, like, quite hypocritical.
Yeah, and... and what you're pointing out here isn't anything new. It's not a secret. Hopefully anybody using, you know, any one of those things you talked about, you know, Mint, Peppermint, you know, all the derivatives, it's not a secret that it's based on Ubuntu, period. Yeah. So, yeah, I could see how it would kind of make you cock your head a little bit, much like a dog that's trying to look at you doesn't understand what you're saying. If you're using one of those in a really big, you know, promoter of said distro and then bashing Ubuntu or bashing Canonical or whatever. But ultimately, and I'll speak about this hopefully in my recently submitted OLF talk, we'll see, fingers crossed. Everybody knows the term time is money, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, your time is worth money, and we especially with all the things happening with some of the bigger tech companies right now, people like some of the things that Microsoft are doing. A lot of people don't, you know, Sony, Canonical, this and that. You're voting with your dollars. Mm-hmm. You should also be voting with your time, because time is money. Time is your dollars. If you're not at work, you know, your time off is worth something to you. Yep. So how are you spending your time, and what is it worth to you? That's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And the question is, do you want to take the time to invest in your Linux knowledge and build up something yourself, or do you want to take the time worrying about something else? And that's a judgment call one has to make onto themselves. No one can make that for you. I just ask that people make that a conscious decision. Don't just blindly make it. And to everyone who's very new to Linux, here's the exact accurate way I'll describe it to you. I love bacon. Man, I can't believe the way they farm pigs. What's wrong with them? Man, that bacon tastes good. Man, I can't believe they actually, you know, put them in pens and they keep them up tight and they feed them and then they kill them. Dang, that's good bacon. Same exact thing, okay? It's just hypocrisy. And to people who know, I'm not going to say you sound dumb, because that's a very rude way of putting it, but you sound like unnaturally biased, I'll say.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's okay to support Mint. Trust me. I encourage people, if you use Mint, you like Mint, donate them money. If you like Zorin, you use Zorin, pay for the paid version. If you use Body and you like it a lot, donate them some cash. You know what I mean? Because the time they put into it saved you time.
Right.
And just like you said, vote with your dollar.
Yes. Yes. When it comes to these projects, and I'm glad you addressed the fact with new users. Ultimately, I think that new users should just use whatever's going to be comfortable for them. But at the same time, realize that whatever they do start with, I've never, ever heard of one person starting to use a distro like when they first were new to Linux, and they've only used that one and they've stuck with it. I've never done that. Never heard of that, period. Right. So think of it as your initial playground. You know, figure out what's out there, what it can do for you, what you need that playground doesn't provide, and then go research. So don't let anyone dissuade you from using a particular distro based on their views, because that's exactly what they are. That's their views, and it's their beliefs. You, as a new user, may not have formed those beliefs yet or figured out what those needs are. So, but as you do use different distros, and as you figure out what you need as a user, you're going to form those opinions and those beliefs and figure out that tool set that you need, and then you're going to eventually land on something that you really do like, that is not only going to provide what you need in terms of, you know, what you need to do day to day, but also what you may need in an environment to make you a better user, to help you broaden and educate yourself.
Yeah, and I will say this, Ray, I'm not calling you out. You're honestly the last person I want to call out about this, because you make it very clear. You want to sit down and you want to use a computer. You don't want to know how all of the underpinnings work. And you at least acknowledge that fact. And that is utterly respectful, that you know exactly what you expect out of it. So if you use Zorin, you're happy with Zorin, keep on rocking on. You know, keep using it. Me, I don't know. I just have a hard time getting behind any distro that appears like a very, very small group of people or a single person is behind it. I mean, not trying to sound dumb, but what if that one person gets a girlfriend, gets married, gets a bad disease all of a sudden?
Or, you know, as Martin Randall Abanda would say, what if they got hit by a bus tomorrow?
Exactly. I mean, and I would expect someone in the community to try to pick it up and try to continue it on. So I don't think it would just disappear or stop. I just have a hard time relying on small groups of people for anything long term. And yes, I have tried all the other ones just to try them. But when it comes time to stick with something, I find myself going more and more towards Debian, because Debian is one of the oldest distros around, controlled by organizations, communities, not by corporations or single people. So I'm very, very confident it's going to be there 5, 8, 10 years from now.
So are you running Debian yourself right now?
I'm running Hybride, which is a derivative of Ubuntu, on this box. And on this box, I am running Debian 7, whatever the newest stable version of Debian is. I never know the names. The names confuse me.
I think
now, if it was alphabetical, you know, starting with A's and then going up, I would know better, to be honest. But they just randomly picked characters from Toy Story, and I didn't even know Toy Story existed up until 4 years ago.
You heard it here first. You heard it here first, folks. Debian needs to be more like Google when it comes to naming their distribution.
Well, just something besides just 6 and 7. Because it confuses me, because while stable is stable, a lot of people start using the testing branch because it's more up to date. So which means stable might be stable, but it's not popular. So I keep getting confused which is which.
Right. Well, but I'm sure you can we can cover this more in detail later, but even if you're using the stable, you can enable some of the more cutting-edge testing areas of the distro to kind of mix and match, right? You're not completely locked into that experience, which is another great benefit to using Debian.
Yes, and I will say this is one of the most underutilized features of Debian and misunderstood features of Debian. Okay, in Ubuntu, you have a thing called PPA. Okay, people understand, at least, you go, you add this line, and now when you need this package, you get it from here, not from your standard repo, but you pull it from a PPA. Mm-hmm. The same kind of thing completely exists in Debian, but it's called apt pinning, apt-pinning, where you can go in, edit a file, add another repository, i.e. the testing or the dev, and you can add individual package from that newer repo. So the same thing exists, it's not as pretty, i.e. without the elbow grease. But it works. It works just fine, too.
Got it. Yeah, the way that, I don't know if I read this somewhere, if I just came on to the conclusion, not that it's any big epiphany and I'm, you know, groundbreaking here, but when I was starting, when I was very new, I just saw, for instance, Mint as a customized Ubuntu experience. It made it a little bit more easy at the time, and it was easier to not necessarily easier to navigate, but, you know, all the things that come with Mint, you know, as far as like the hardware detection, especially the hardware detection, years ago, and to this day is still good. So, but I at least knew, the fact that the first two that I used were Ubuntu, I think it was 8.10, and then Mint, whatever it was, that was at the same time. But I knew that one came from the other.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I highly encourage people. The main reason, honestly, I try Mint every now and then is just so I understand better what other people are talking about when they, because there's a lot of conversations going around Mint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I honestly, wholeheartedly respect what they're doing with Mate. It ain't Mate. Mate.
No, it's not, because there's no umlaut.
There's no anything. It's just M-A-T-E. Mm-hmm. And Cinnamon. With that said, I'm not taking the brain cycles it takes for me to train myself to use those user interfaces when it appears like a very, very small group of people are developing and maintaining that. You know what I mean? I don't, because what if in 3 months the one guy decides, nah, we're not doing this anymore. It was too much like work. Then all of my brain cycles I actually spent sitting down learning this system is for nothing. You know, I hate double work and I hate work for nothing, which is why my bosses don't like me.
Okay.
But I digress. So
to kind of pack your overall, I don't want to say rant, but your argument, anyway, what to sort of condense what you just said down a little bit further is, if you're going to put all your eggs in one basket, make sure you like the basket, agree with what the basket is doing, and look at the track record of the basket.
Yeah. As far as American football goes, I hate the Dallas Cowboys, but if you're going to become a fan of a team, that's a safe bet because they're every couple of years very competitive or in it. In European soccer, the Arsenal. If you're going to support a team out of the gates, why not the Arsenal? They've been there. They've been in that Premier League for something like 80 years. You know what I mean? If you want to stick with the winner, someone you can trust, someone you can have faith in, someone who's going to be around, make that decision wisely is all I'll say. Because I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying I have the odds on my side.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, you put a link in here. I'm not going to lie, Cody. I saw it, but I didn't actually see it.
Well, before I get to that, I think I have another link that I'm just going to throw in here right now because it's oh so appropriate for what we were just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
If for some reason you don't like Ubuntu or you don't like any of the derivatives or you do like them but you just want to know what's out there, one of Door's favorite distros, Fedora, released their new version today, 19, Fedora 19, Schrodinger's Cat, came out today on July 2nd. And they have some new features. New features for the open source distribution include the developer's assistant, which accelerates development efforts by providing templates, samples, and tool chains for different languages. OpenShift Origin, which allows easy building of platform as a service infrastructure.
Yeah.
Node.js, Ruby 2.0.0, MariaDB, Checkpoint and Restore, which allows users to checkpoint and restore processes, and OpenLMI, which makes remote management of machines simpler. And the distro packs GNOME 3.8, KDE Plasma Workspace 4.10, and Mate Desktop 1.6.
So come on, beta testers. Come on, download it.
Well, yeah, the alpha's been out for quite a while. I might throw this on a box maybe next week, but not anytime soon. I'm too busy with something else, which I'll mention later on the show. But and when I said Door's favorite distro, that it could not be further from the truth.
Well, here's the thing. There are few distributions I respect more than Fedora. I will use every other distro as a daily driver before I use Fedora. I mean, it's basically a testing branch of Red Hat. Mm-hmm. And it's great that it exists. I just don't want to be a beta tester. And I honestly don't know anything it does extremely unique that makes me think I have to run it. At the same token, I know they do a lot of things before anyone else does it. So if I wanted that experience before the mass of other people did, I would be running it.
Right. It's quite bleeding edge, and they introduce a lot of things early. In some people's opinion, sometimes it's too early, because of like you said.
Well, to be honest, I would much rather them do it too early than too late. I mean, like...
Right. You got to hit that sweet spot.
Right. Like, changing off of MySQL to MariaDB to me is perfect timing. I mean, perfect. Bullseye. Great time to switch. And I want to see Maria become the de facto standard across the board here within 2 or 3 years. If it happens, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I like seeing Fedora pushing more people to use it.
Yep. So, yeah, if you are, if you're a Fedora fan, chances are you already know and you have it installed or you already had the alpha. But if for some reason you wanted to try a new distro, try something a little bit different, if you're locked into one area, one camp or another, give it a try. Adore and I tried 18 skin with XFCE at NELF, and then I had it on a box for about a month, and I thought it was great. Once I got a little bit of hand-holding, but their community and their documentation is very great for that.
Oh, yeah. And I believe we were at NELF, and the Red Hat guy was telling us about OpenShift.
Yes.
If I had the need for a product like that, I would be all over this. But I don't do community development with QA testing or anything.
I believe that OpenShift was the company that... Red Hat was the table where we got the USB key bottle openers, and OpenShift was on the other side of it.
Best thing ever.
Mine is somewhere in this office. I'm going to find it. It's like a needle in a haystack. Yep, it is.
The only reason I have mine handy is because I like beer, and I don't like twist-off beer because that means it's made out of rice and it's not very good.
Nope.
I said it.
You did say it. I heard it, and it's recorded forever because this is going online.
So everyone...
You heard it.
Yeah.
The NSA heard it.
Everyone who likes to try new things, and every Fedora ambassador lover out there, have at it.
People who like the color blue.
Couple of weeks. Y'all, people who love the color blue.
People who like cats. It's
Well, who like to question whether or not a cat's alive or dead? Yes.
That's right. Well, you know, So yeah, it's out as of today. Check it out. And if you are going to install it, and if you have anything to say, send in an email to podcast@linuxforthestofus.com.
Yeah, send it to smlr.us.
You can send it to cody@podness.com. I'll read it.
Yeah. They love Fedora, at least. One of them loves it, and I think one of them likes it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which is a much higher percentage than this show.
I think. Yes. Okay, so moving on. Why don't you get the one below the first one there, and then we're kind of switching.
Okay. Genius. First, there's normal genius. There's interesting genius. And then there's superb genius. And I don't know why they didn't think of this earlier. We have all in the tech world had to have seen by now. Let me Google that for you. Mm-hmm. I believe I actually heard about this on Tilts. If I had to place a wager, I would say that was where I heard about it. Nobody else has mentioned it. I can't believe it. I'm sorry. I've already used it twice this last week on coworkers. It is lmddgtfy.net. Let me duckduckgo that for you.net.
Mm-hmm.
Super easy. You go in there, you type in, for instance, Linux Mint, and then you just copy the URL out at the bottom, share the URL, just click it, go, send them the link, or you can obfuscate it, and then it just quite simply does exactly what Let Me Google That For You did, but with DuckDuckGo.
Can you put that link in the chat, because I don't know how to research anything by myself on the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
And I kind of want to read about Mint.
Exactly. I will say this. Again, I'm not a huge fan of DuckDuckGo. I really understand what they're trying to do. I'm not a fan of their results, and that's because they use Yahoo and Microsoft as their primary backends. You can do stuff with Google on it. I want to see this service get better. That's why I have it as my default search engine in a browser, just so I get them a little bit of extra clicks, you know, versus what I would normally give them, which is nothing. And that's why I'm talking about this link here. I want to see them get more activity, hopefully make a little bit more money, and hopefully make their search results better.
Which browser? I'm curious.
In a Firefox browser.
Okay.
But I'm not sure it's actually named Firefox. I think it was one of those rebranded ones.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always when I first heard about DuckDuckGo as a listener of this show well over a year ago, I used it for a little while. But yeah, I mean, if you're so used to one solution, you try something else, it can seem a little weird. But at least explore the options. That's what I always say.
Yeah. I'll just say a random person just gave me Let Me DuckDuckGo That For You link. And it types in the search box, How do uninstall Fedora 19? It didn't come from me. I would never do something like that.
You got two machines in front of you. I don't believe you for nothing.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Okay, great. Well, the next topic. Now, Dor, if there's one thing I've heard you talk about many times.
Bacon?
Well, there's that. Well, instead of you listing off the things that I know that you've talked about, let me just finish this. If you think of tablets, tablets are everywhere now. Don't believe that BlackBerry CEO, whatever his name is, Hines, saying how tablets will be dead in 5 years. It's like, whatever, BlackBerry tablets will be dead in 5 months. But anyway. They're here to stay. Touch interfaces are, you know, an evolution. They've taken over. They're you know, outselling, you know, many other facets of tech, you know, quarter after quarter after quarter. However, when we think of tablets right now, obviously you think of the iPad. You know, you think of the Nexus 7 or some of the other, you know, really good Android-based tablets. But one of the things that has been introduced by some manufacturers that you've really sort of clamored for, he said, I want a really good Linux-based tablet. Well, here comes another entry into the battle for some good Linux tablets. The very first Tizen tablet has come out. It is from a Japanese based manufacturer, Shisutena.
Yep. Good job.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. It's a quad core tablet. It's a 10.1 inch screen. Let's see here. It matches the specs of like a high-end Android tablet. It's a 1.4 gigahertz quad-core Cortex A9 processor backed up with 2 gigs of RAM and 32 gigs of internal flash memory. 10.1-inch screen running at 1920 by 1200 resolution. And see, it has a Wi-Fi. I hope so. Micro SD slot, which is fantastic, and a 2-megapixel out-facing camera and a 0.3-megapixel in-facing camera. And it says that they are taking it to a trade show on October 23rd, so quarter four of this year.
Good. Very good. Now, I will say, I don't know how, quote-unquote, Linux this is. And by that, I just mean, I don't know if it's really true Linux to where I can drop to the command line and do familiar tasks. I believe I can. I will say that. I believe I can. Tizen is the great-great grandson of MAEMO, mm-hmm. M-A-E-M-O, which was the operating system on my Nokia 810, I think it was, internet tablet. Yeah, N810 tablet. And in that, it was basically Linux. It had BusyBox. It didn't have pure Bash. But I could still do a large amount of stuff. The hardware was really underpowered with that device. Not with this device. Dude, that thing is like power ridiculous, hungry, big. Mm-hmm. It's a 1.4 quad-core processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of internal storage, the resolution 1920 by 1200. I think it's good. I'm not going to say fantastic or great. Good.
Well, it's great as far as today's standards for like affordable tablets. To have these specs on a launch device for this new platform, arguably, at least for this company, it's quite impressive because they could have gone with, you know, a 7, an 8.1 or whatever,
right.
You know, with lower specs, try to get a lower price point to enter the market. They don't have a price point for it yet, but I'm guessing in the neighborhood of like $350 to $500 based on these specs.
Yeah.
That's respectable.
Yeah, and a front camera and a rear camera. So
yep.
they're definitely going all in. They're definitely not pulling punches, mm-hmm. playing it safe. Now I'll say, from what I saw on videos of Tizen in the past, if you take Android and you take Tizen on the exact same hardware side by side and you do similar tasks, because you can't do the exact same thing because Android is running Android APK programs and Tizen is not. But if you do like tasks side by side, the Tizen tablet will finish them up to 5 times faster because Tizen is so much lighter than the Android Davlic Java stack. So mm-hmm. a quad core 1.4 is pretty severe. It's yes. pretty beefy. It's pretty good. Now, the only thing that we don't know, how widespread are these going to be available? I don't expect to go into Best Buy in the next year and see these sitting on the shelf. If I do, fan-diddly-tastic, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Are these only going to be available in China? It's possible. Are they only going to be available in South America or Brazil? Possible. I don't know. I would love to see them at least pop up in the U.S. here and there.
Yeah, well, Tizen as a platform... And before I go on about that, I wanted to say that we haven't quite hit, you know, the raw Linux experience on a tablet yet. But this, in my opinion, is closer than Android is.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
By leaps and bounds. But Tizen itself as a platform, of course, is backed by Samsung, Intel, a variety of worldwide carriers, and the Linux Foundation.
Right.
So, yeah, and much like what you're referencing is you don't know what country it's going to launch in. I mean, I could see it, you know, launching heavy in Korea, obviously, because Samsung's base of operations. But with the rollout of the Mozilla phones and tablets, or at least what they've alluded to already. It's some markets that are sort of non-traditional for bigger tech releases, but those devices, and especially when you were talking about like the Firefox OS phones, they're lower powered devices where if you hand someone that's used to an Android or an iOS device one of those, they'd be like, well, yeah, it's quick, but man, that screen's small. How fast is the processor? Well, I don't know, whatever. Like, they're only going to base it on specs because ultimately we're spoiled when it comes to hardware, and we don't use nearly the capabilities of what we already have. So if you're a hardcore tech geek, and if you're looking to buy one of those, you'd almost might, I mean, some I don't know, aficionados might consider it a step back.
Yeah, and I will say, even techs have the inherent nature of hearing a higher number and just thinking it's better. Right. 64-bit has to be better. It's twice as much as 32-bit.
It's twice as much, man.
Same as that kind of thing. Now, I will say Japan is a high-end market where things we still see available for sale, they don't. They've been out of the market for 6 months. I mean, they have, it seems like, only the very highest of the high-end and then the very lowest of the low, and there's almost nothing in the middle. So I do expect Japan to be a big target. Hopefully, if they're moderately successful in some of those other markets, then we might see it over here. It might be rebranded, and I mean the actual hardware rebranded. I don't care if it's the Best Buy tablet. I don't care if it's the Fry's tablet or the Microsoft. I don't care. I don't care if it's the Ford tablet. When you buy a Ford car, you get it for free.
Hey, all
right. I just want to see it.
Yeah, well, ultimately, it's a good springboard for Tizen to enter the market.
Yes.
And I hope they do well. I really want to give them the benefit of the doubt here, because especially when it came to netbooks and Android tablets, you know, you go to some of these electronics shows, it's like, oh, 57 of them were quote-unquote launched this week, but three of them make it to market, you know.
Right.
So, exactly. But with the pedigree of backers that this has going for it already at this stage, you're talking what about 3.5 months away.
Yeah, and I will say I think Thankfault, Samsung was one of the company who literally has money involved in this project. They also have money on E17. They actually invested money into that. Samsung wants to see other things succeed. They're not putting all their eggs in the Android basket.
Mm.
So I am happy about that. And I'm happy a big guy. And there's also, I want to say, Intel is with Tizen. There's somebody else who's in with Tizen. So that's good.
Hmm.
Okay, now I wanted to bring this up, but I wanted to bring it up in its correct context.
Oh, okay.
You know, new devices are coming out, new phones are coming out, new phones are coming out all the time. And people now are starting to see in stores microSD and SD cards that are 64 gigs and bigger.
Oh, yeah. I saw one today.
Yeah, I have to tell people in the Linux world, be warned about this, okay? Typically SD cards, the micro SD cards, are formatted FAT32. I believe in the spec it's a limitation, but it's a glass ceiling that a micro SD card or SD card FAT32 cannot be formatted greater than 32 gigabytes. You can hack around, you can make it, but most people don't, and manufacturers have basically forfeited using FAT32. Whenever you see a piece of SD or micro SD that 64 gigs or better, it is going to use by default XFAT, E-X-F-A-T. Okay. This is a very encumbered and protected and copyrighted and patented and all that kind of stuff format. Okay. What that means is if Company A wants to use it, or software development team B wants to use this and be able to read and write and format to it, they need to pay Microsoft, the owner of this technology, $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's some kind of arrangements that can be made if you're going to do limited things to it. I believe you can't even write to it without paying them money legally. You can read it, but you can't write to it. And I'm positive you cannot format to it without paying them money legally, that is. So I will heavily encourage people, if you're, you know, going out and getting a new SD card for your phone or for your camera, and you use Linux, and if you do see a 64 gig card, you might want to get 2 32 gigabyte cards in its place, because XFAT is a very proprietary and closed format of disk drives. You know, in Linux, we can freely see FAT32, FAT16, NTFS, HFS+, and all these other formats, and write to them. Now, with HFS+, I believe when it's above 2 terabytes, there's other issues involved. But for the most part, we in Linux can access everything.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where we're going to start to hit a hurdle, which is XFAT. Now, with that said, for home people who do have XFAT SD card, a micro SD card and stuff, you can format in XFAT. It is completely against the law. Just like if you download Mint and you have the ability to encode into MP3. Technically, it's against the law. Is anybody going to come knocking on your door? No. No, they're not. And I wouldn't worry about that. The last thing they're going to do is want to come get me. But if I'm a software developer and I want to be able to reformat a XFAT card, I'm not going to do it, because they will come after me then, because I'm trying to make money off of it. So it's going to be questionably supported in Linux, but you can, via this PPA in Ubuntu, Debian, Zorin, all that, you can format XFAT. But I do not know how successful this is. I do not know how solid that format will be. I don't know if you'll see corruption in data or not, but now at least you can format in XFAT. I'll just tell everybody that's for, you know, for you guys to play with if you want to. Me, no. I'll just keep getting 32 gig stuff at the most.
And if you want to hear the details on how Microsoft is charging these fees to these companies, you can check out My Hard Drive Died, episode 16, if I'm not mistaken, where Scott Molden goes into detail on what Microsoft is pulling with these fees. Because, I mean, if you think about it, it's, I don't want to say extortion, but...
Well, no, it's like...
It's a like, proprietary standard that they're introducing, and once it gets a foothold into the industry, especially in the realm of high-end, I mean, if SanDisk was exclusively releasing their cards with XFAT, and let's say that for some reason Nikon only made a camera that only accepted certain, you know, file formats, then you as a consumer or you as a professional that relies on those tools are essentially forced to use them.
Yeah, but for some reason, these companies are jumping on board and saying, it's fine, we'll pay you the money, we'll do it, let's do it. And I think it's because companies want to say, look, we have a bigger number.
You know, right,
Just like the other thing. I mean, they can say, well, look, we have 64 gigabyte cards. Right. And certain people will just, oh, 64, and just buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because... just like what we were talking about earlier, you know, some people want, especially, well, you and Martin and I have been talking a lot about SD cards lately when it comes to Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
And it's not just the size of the card. You know, we're talking about read,
write, speed, how you use
formats. Well, that too. Yes, it's definitely how you use it, especially when it comes to the Pi. But there's many more things in consideration that if you're doing your research properly that you will consider and you will look for. But some people are just like, to 64 gig card, that's, yep. Got to get that one because I got a lot more photos I can put on there.
Yeah,
that's a lot more videos at the dirt track that I can put on my phone.
That's a whole lot more vines.
Right.
Oy vey.
Oh, jeez.
Yep.
We're not even going to get into that.
I don't want to.
Not at all.
Okay, We had a voicemail from 5150 to Android App Addicts. And I kind of sarcastically called him out. He knows I was playing with him. Other people listening to the show might not have, but I tried to make it friendly, okay? He had a problem. And that was on his Android phone, he has an internal SD and an external SD. And most things in Android don't allow you to change default download destinations. They just put it where they want to. And then you have to go find it, or you have to go get it. And his is defaulting to internal storage. Okay. Android is Linux. Okay, there's a thing in Linux called a symlink. S-Y-M-L-I-N-K. People on Windows have things called shortcuts. Okay, this is not a shortcut. Okay. This is literally like a portal, the game Portal. Okay. If you put on your desktop a symlink to your download folder, which is a folder down, because before it would be home/Kodi/desktop, and then home/Kodi/downloads. Well, mm-hmm. If on the desktop you put a symlink to downloads, okay? And then if you say, copy everything from my desktop, it will not copy a link to your downloads. It will copy everything in your downloads like it is a subdirectory from your desktop, because that's what a symlink is. A symlink is basically a virtual portal directly into the other area. Not a shortcut.
Okay, I think I got it the way you explained it. So instead of creating, a shortcut. How is it better than a shortcut? Because if I have a shortcut, let's say on my desktop to my music folder, and I download an MP3, legally acquire MP3s from a CD that I purchased in physical form at a store onto my desktop, and I drag and drop that first track to the shortcut, won't it go to that folder?
In Windows, yes, it will, but there's a lot of other things that had to go on the background.
Okay.
In the Linux world, there's soft links and hard links. That is a whole other ballgame, okay? For our purpose, all we need to know is the typical soft link should work fine. And here's the gist of it. In Windows, if you set your download location in Chrome to be /users/Kodi/my-documents/downloads, mm-hmm. and then you go delete that downloads folder, and then you create a shortcut called downloads, your downloads will fail in Chrome.
Right.
Because that's not a real folder.
The original destination doesn't exist anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. We're in Linux and Android. If you go to that internal SD card, delete that downloads folder, then create a symlink that points to a folder called downloads on your external SD card, the downloads will work. Because it is a virtual portal right to the other spot. So it treats it like it is a real folder, a real hard true path.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Right, and I did find a application that I used in the past and completely forgot about called Root Explorer File Manager, and that's an Android application. In that application, it will let you create symlinks. So if you want to create a symlink from one place to another, hypothetically, in your downloads, you want to have a symlink right to your music folder or to your pictures folder. You can create a symlink there to where you don't have to navigate someplace else. You're already in downloads, one click away, now you're in pictures. Symlinks are, honestly, they're hard to grasp. They're hard to know when you can and when you can't use them. The whole question becomes, if you want direct access to someplace else and programmatically direct access to something else. That's when symlinks are the solution, I'll say.
And one of the things that kind of helped me visualize this a bit too was the fact that symlink is short for symbolic link.
Yes. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So 5150, I'll encourage you download Root Explorer File Manager. Delete that download folder on your internal SD card. Create one on your external SD card, or could just move it over, and then create that symlink in your internal SD card, and then everything will work as advertised, as you expect, as you want. Okay. I had to bring this one, and I will say I actually had to manually fix the URL in this because the URL before ended off with show equals hardware, and that makes the site come up completely in, I don't know, Russian, Belgium, something. I don't know.
I think it's Russian, yeah.
Yeah, something I don't understand. I had to put at the end of the URL lang equals ing. Ampersand L-A-N-G equals E-N. Now it's in English. Had to mention this because I'm so jealous. Okay, this I think had to be a old phone. I don't know if it was a Palm Pre Plus, an old Windows mobile phone or something. Mm-hmm. But he has a Raspberry Pi and a small touch screen. And on the side of the touch screen, you can see a home, an envelope, what looks like an open book, a telephone, and a music note. So this used to be a device where you could hit home, you could hit mail, you could hit book, I guess.
Contacts.
You could hit phone or you could hit music. I don't know what that device was. And I honestly just figured out how to find the... I just figured out how to put it in English, so I didn't have time to really check that out either. But he basically has a Raspberry Pi and a small portable touchscreen to go with it. There's a YouTube video that you can watch. Dude, I'm so jealous by this guy. Okay, it's not a YouTube video. I don't know. I think it's a locally hosted video. But if you look at the video and you jump to about 1 minute, I want to say a minute 15 or so, yeah, you can see him touching the screen and the mouse moving along with it. I would love to just hack and play on this little device.
It is a tiny screen, but man, what a start.
Yeah, and now if you are smart, then you can also get a small stylus with the stupid thing on the end.
Mm-hmm.
And you could use that if the screen is in fact too small, which it looks like it might be. But I would do more than put up with it. So if anyone wants to make fun of me for stupid devices, just go to this link at valdodov.com, look at it, and then email me and make fun of me.
That's valdodov.com.
Yes. I want it bad.
Yeah, it's I believe it's in reference to this specific LCD, but you can get them on eBay. There's a link to eBay in the article, which we will have in the show notes. But that LCD, it's only about $20 US.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's about a 2.5-inch screen surface area. But what in kind of reference to what you said with those buttons, I'm seeing versions of it with and without those buttons, which makes me think that might be... I don't think it's projected on the screen. I think it just might be an overlay.
Right.
So those might, in fact, just be 5 contact points, which you can program to anything.
Well,
maybe.
You know, I still couldn't do it because I think soldering is required.
Yeah.
But I would still, if he lived close to me, I would have already been over his house and walked out with it one day and just acted stupid.
Just find someone on Fiverr to do the soldering for you.
Okay. That requires work, so I'll have to do that later.
Then go on Fiverr and then hire someone to find someone on Fiverr.
There you go.
See? Dude, I have nothing but solutions here, Dor.
Yes.
Okay.
And I will say the only thing he's missing is a good quality case.
Yet. Yeah. No, I don't want to talk about it yet. Yeah.
I forbid you.
Yeah, that's okay. Well, no, it was something else in reference to what you think I was about to talk about, but yeah. Let's just say I've been looking at a lot of things like this lately.
Good.
I'll say that. There you go.
Google's your friend.
Google's your friend. Very cool. All right, so let's see here. Oh, that was actually it for the links that we had for the week. We're going to roll into, I have one email, but I also have a response to an email from last week, or I should say last show. We took a little bit of time off, but man, we're back. We're in force. We're actually doing a makeup show this week, so we're going to get right back on the train. It's like it never stopped. It's because we don't stop thinking about Linux. We're not going to stop talking about Linux.
Choo-choo.
That's right. So Nathan wrote in on last show saying how he was having some problems with Java, and specifically when he was trying to run Minecraft. I have the old email somewhere. He was trying to run OpenJDK Java 6 or OpenJDK Java 7, and trying to run Minecraft on a roommate's old Intel dual core 2.2 gigahertz 3 gigs of RAM running Vista. Ugh. Okay, this is what the system was initially running. Anyway, whenever we get problems like this, eventually someone writes us back and says, hey, I have a solution to that. And usually it's someone from the community that has contributed before, because we have a lot of regular listeners, and we thank you all for doing it. But one of our good friends, yours and mine, Josh, a.k.a. Knucklehead Tech, actually came up with a solution for Nathan, and we're going to provide those links in the show notes. So,
apparently Knuckle is good for something.
You said that. Mm-hmm. You said that. Those are Dora's words, Josh. Although he lives closer to me, so he might actually take it out on me. But I doubt, I did him a solid today. I did him a favor, so I doubt he'll take it out on me.
Good.
Yeah. Just say he needed a piece of tech that I didn't need anymore, and I sent it to him. So.
Good. You can pay people off. Bribery is very accepted.
Well, yeah. Well, that's how I got to be on this show. One day, a photo of me, of an 8x10, autographed photo of me arrived in one package. You're like, who is this kid? Oh, I know. This is the guy that makes fun of Gene all the time. And then, but underneath that photo, was a 30-pound bag of bacon. Mm-hmm. And here I am. So it can be done, folks.
Oh, I have my price. Absolutely.
Okay. And so does Steve C, apparently. And this is a great time to plug voiceoversandmore.com. And I only say he has a price because he told us he has a price on one episode, recent episode of Android App Addicts. If you're an Android fan, you don't know about that show, go check it out. But if you need a voiceover for a project, Steve C is your man. Go check out voiceoversandmore.com. So yeah, we do have those links. We'll have those links in the show notes. Nathan, actually send Nathan the links directly, so hopefully he'll even have them before the show. But if you want to research it yourself, you want to play Minecraft, and you're having the same issues, check out the show notes for this show, episode 137, and they will be all solved. And thank you, Josh, for getting in touch with me today and sending that just in time before the show.
Yep. Yeah, and he talks about stuff I just don't understand. I don't know anything about Minecraft. Anything. So he tried to vox me saying, oh yeah, the LDWWGL doesn't update itself most of the time. You got to go update. I'm like, what? I don't, just send me an email. So he thankfully sent me this. And this is hands-on experience because his son, I think, is old enough to technically kick him where it counts. So Josh's Minecraft server runs well.
Yep. It
runs very well.
But, another plug, if you do want to hear good things about Minecraft and gaming in general when it comes to gaming on Linux, gaming on non-Linux platforms, from a father and son perspective, you should check out Miles of Gaming, mm-hmm. which is Chad Wallenberg's new podcast.
I hate him.
You don't hate him.
Hate him so much because him and his son mentioned the game Don't Starve.
Don't Starve?
Yeah, I'm telling you right now, Jedi Mind Trick. These are not the games you're looking for. I've watched over 10 hours of video on that game in the last week, and I'm trying to, and it's only $15, so I'm trying to gently finagle the money to buy it, because I can get it on Steam, and it runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux. So I'm trying to finagle it now.
Yeah, this sounds familiar.
And I'm trying to say 10 hours? For the kids. Oh, I watched at least 10 hours of video.
10 hours? Dude, Door, time is money.
It's a good game. It looks lots of fun, and I've learned a lot. And it just, you know, the plethora of stuff you can see is insane in this game. The plethora of stuff you can do in this game is insane. And it's Minecrafty in the fact you got to live, survive.
But is it multiplayer?
No.
No? Okay.
No way. It's just you. And let me tell you, if this comes on Android, boom, sales through the roof. I have little doubt in my mind about that. I'm trying to tell my wife it's for the kids.
Well, here's what I'm going to commit to. And this is a very loose commitment. It could not happen at all, but damn it, I'm going to try. I'm not going to try as hard to do this as to get you to go to scale 2014, because that is that is a train off the tracks. I mean, it's not off the tracks. It's on track, but it's it can't be stopped. I'm going to get footage of you playing Don't Starve on a machine at OLF this year.
Okay.
Okay.
I might be, like, you know, waiting for my food to come while we're at a place, and I got a little...
That's fine.
...book open, because if I... Oh, never mind.
That's fine.
Wait a minute. Can you run Steam games offline?
Yeah.
Oh, because then I could have... Crouton on my Chromebook, and then my Crouton be running my Steam, and on my Steam be running my Don't Starve.
Some of the games, though, will require certain graphical hardware. They won't start. I will say that, because Steam. I don't think they may have some streaming game. No, that's On Play or whatever the hell, Go Live, whatever it's called now. I don't remember.
On Live.
On Live. Yeah, that was close. But you just download it. Like it's just. Think of it as just another digital store. I'm going to say this sentence and I'm going to shut up about it. Otherwise, it's going to be a 5-hour podcast. Left 4 Dead 2 officially came out of beta today on Linux, Steam for Linux. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I saw that posting and I immediately had to, like, look away.
Yeah. Luckily, I read it when I was on the road. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking to you people right now.
Exactly.
Be shooting zombies, training for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, we got one email, and Door read this, and he really he forwarded it to me, because it was a very kind of a touching story, and you'll find out why. I really, really do like this email, and I'm just going to read it now. Our listener and regular listener, Marco Duran, writes in. He says, "Hi, Door. First, let me thank you and your team for encouraging me to finally migrate to Linux. I have used it in the past, but had not fully migrated until today. I feel pretty good about it because here in Mexico, piracy rules, and I did not want to be a part of it. My first Linux distro was Damn Small Linux back in 2005. Since then, I have tried many distros, but it was complicated since the main OS in Mexico is Windows, and I wasn't happy. I have known about Linux since 2005, but I finally found a distro that suits my needs, mainly because I need my podcasts to burn CDs and DVDs, YouTube videos, and for the wife, YouTube videos for the wife, and need a distro with all the drivers for my machine. I'm still fairly new to Linux, and the command line is something that I have a hard time with. I'm currently using Pear OS 7, and I believe it's based on Debian and Ubuntu, and he provides a link, which is pearlinux.fr. And so far, so good. I remembered you talking about Remaster Sys, and I just made a custom installation CD because it is hard to have it in Spanish. Somehow it gives you some trouble with Spanish language support during installation, but finally gets it up and running. And now I will upload it to other people so they don't have to deal with all the issues I encountered. Recently, I had a need for a cache server. Then I remembered a couple years ago you talked about a glorious thing called pfSense. And now I have implemented pfSense with a cache server and web filtering, and set up a separate server with a LAMP stack for some web apps that we use internally along with a strong Wi-Fi signal, and my boss is happy with all of it. I want to thank you for all your hard work you guys put into this. I love the show, Marco."
Yeah, and I just got to make sure people get this part. It isn't like I get a lot of emails from Marco. In fact, I think this might be the first one, maybe two I've gotten from Marco in the past. He considers himself a new user. He isn't even positive that Pear is based off Ubuntu and Debian, which it is. And Byer Brown loves Pear. That's why I know of its existence.
Yep.
He considers himself a new user. He isn't sure about this thing yet. He's able to put a pfSense box on his network doing content filtering, and he's able to set up a LAMP stack. Okay? Nothing in Linux is technically hard. You just got to know what to do, and Google is your friend. There's no doubt in my mind, he just went on he went on YouTube and said pfSense web filtering, and he watched a video on it, and he got the gist of it, and then he went and toyed with it, and then he got it to work. Same thing with LAMPstack.
He could have also not known where to find it and had someone DuckDuckGo it for him.
True. Yeah. So I really do highly encourage people, don't just stick with a desktop. You can't just stick with the desktop, okay? There are so many places in your digital life, and especially in your family's digital life, where you could utilize a BSD or a Linux to take the place of something that your neighbor might end up paying $300+ for.
Yep.
And you're doing it nearly for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the kind of knowledge and power that you then have the control in your own hand, and you know, for instance, there's not an NSA backdoor in pfSense. Just saying, you know.
Well, what I really like about this email is that in four paragraphs, I mean, it tells us his story so far, and there's a lot in there. And yet, not only has he known about Linux and maybe dabbled for a while and recently, you know, taken the plunge and not only implemented it at home but at work, but he's still very humble in the fact that he realizes that he's still technically a noob to a certain extent.
Right.
And
well, and he's in Mexico. I believe his primary language is Spanish, and he writes a utterly elegant English email. This is more elegant than most people I know, where English is their first language.
I'm not trying to take anything away from Marco. I did just a tad of editing, but it was nothing. It was just more formatting so I could read it better, which I do for all emails. But no, exactly right. Yeah, and I've seen that from a few of our other international listeners too, where they almost apologize off the bat. You know, it's like no, you're communicating very well. By all means, continue. So.
Yeah, and I'll say he wrote this email explicitly to me. When people write me something by myself, I always go back, if I really do like the email, and I'll ask them, is it okay if we bring this up on the show? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't do that. Now, if he would have addressed it, hey, Cody, and/or, to me that instantaneously means it's for the show. So I thank him for letting me bring it to the show, and I want to highly encourage people, you know, dabble, play, experiment. Stop and think where something could be used in your life. And if you do have questions, A, DuckDuckGo, Google, whatever. B, don't hesitate to contact anyone who knows more than you, whether you contact the guys at Tilts, whether you contact Sunday Morning Linux Review, whether you contact Guru from Android Buffet, who knows his fair share of Linux. There is so many people out there willing to actually help that really there's no reason. There's no reason. And, you know, if you want to contact me, contact me. I'm sometimes a little behind in email, but I try.
I can't let you forget Nightwise.
Nightwise, sorry.
If you contact Nightwise. And he's at home in Belgium or in the car on the way to work.
Well, here's,
applauding me right now, and you're welcome, sir.
Well, here's the best thing about Nightwise. Four languages, I want to say he knows, so you can probably type in your native language, as long as it's not Chinese, Japanese, or Russian, and the odds are he'll be able to read it. Because I know it's like German, English,
French, and...
French, yes.
Oh, man, I know the other one, too.
Belgiumese,
no.
Danish, Dutch, Slovak, I don't know.
I'll ask him.
I don't even know what the languages are. I mean, I know it ain't Latin.
No.
I don't know. But the odds are he knows it. I'll say that.
Could be Esperanto.
Hope not.
Yeah. I'll get clarification and we'll talk about it on the show.
Cool.
In the future. So thank you, Marco. And please touch base with us in the future when you start using Linux to not only further your education, but for perhaps fold it in more at work or at home, any other products you have going on. Because one of the things, too, really, really kind of touched me in that email, and I don't want to go on about this, but the fact that he alludes to the fact that piracy is very rampant. And he just didn't want to be a part of it.
Good man.
So yeah, no, it's rising up above what's around you and wanting something better, not only for yourself but for his family. And then he wanted to use better tools at work, and it's paying off at work.
Yeah.
So kudos to you, sir.
Yeah, I'd say Marco gets this year's Mythical Award.
He gets a shout out of the week from me. Okay. Shout out goes to you this week, Marco. All right. Well, that's basically all we have this week, Dor. Do you have anything to sort of send us off with?
I believe we are going to actually get an advertiser on this show. Nick from D7, I talked to him a little bit today, and he came to the realization, I can't say thanks enough to Martin Obando, most Linux users... I believe this as well. Most Linux users are advanced users on Windows or Mac as well, which means you have family members and friends and other people ask, can you fix my computer? Can you fix my computer? Can you fix my computer? With a tool like D7, I would say it's made for someone who likes Linux because it's the tinkerer's paradise. So I think he's going to become an advertiser here soon. I'm not positive. Either way, I like that product, and I really like and respect Nick the person. He literally pours decade plus of experience in fixing computers hands-on into this product. And if you fix Windows computers to any degree, this will help save your time. I'm crossing my fingers.
Yep, and I've heard nothing but good things, especially from Martin and a few of our other regulars on Google Plus that have used the tool, speak very highly of it. Not only of it and its effectiveness, but Nick as a person, because it's one thing to just have someone make it or a company to make a good product, but the support they provide and what kind of person they are, if they allow you to view those items, gives you a better idea of where the product is coming from and who you're supporting. And I haven't heard anybody yet complain about supporting him and his product and what it's done for them. So,
right,
very, very highly rated, spoken about.
And the very last good thing about Nick and D7, the bottle caps that are metal with the bottle cap openers that are metal with the USB in them, Nick has a D7 version of this exact same bottle opener.
So, and you can email Cody at Linux for the rest of us, or Cody at podcast.com for my address, Nick, and I'll review one of those for you.
Exactly.
You're welcome.
Got to review it some more this week. Yeah, so if you have the need to open beer and want a USB key, and I believe the ones we got from Red Hat are only 4 gig.
Yeah, I think so.
And all I want to say is I believe NICs are twice as big. So if these are 8, NICs are 16. If these are 4, NICs are 8.
Nice. You know what we need? We need a company to create a keg tap with a bottle opener on it, just in case. I'm talking just like, in case. Yeah, it has to have maybe like a
corkscrew.
There you go. Yeah, okay. So we have a keg tap with a bottle opener, a corkscrew in it, maybe a compartment for spare micro thin cables like micro SD. A micro USB, maybe an HDMI, mm-hmm. or maybe like some super cable with different adapters.
Right.
And but it has to be made out of like graphite or something, so it doesn't show up on like a scan at the airport. Although it will look like a device in X-ray. So people are like, what the hell is this? I'm like, well, let me tell you what it can do. And you launch into a sales pitch, and then they just have you on your way to your next destination because they don't want to listen to you anymore.
Exactly.
That's what happens to me.
And I did hear from someone, if you walk up to one of those TSA agents and say CID, they think you're part of a government organization called CID, the letter C, Charlie, I, identify D, David, and sometimes they let you get right around their scans and stuff.
Hmm.
So it is noted.
I don't know if I should try that out, because I'm taking two very important trips soon.
No, because then if they say, what? And you say, do you want to see my ID?
Ah, there you go. See? Yeah. It's like, oh, no, you misunderstood me, but here, let me clarify for you and exactly. Not have this be awkward anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah, I'll try that out. Yeah, I'm going on a trip for work next month, and then the month after that, September 12th through 16th, I will be in Columbus, Ohio at what event, Door?
Ohio Linux Fest, where there is a call for papers is almost over. I believe there's still a couple more days left. Do you want to know more about that? OhioLinux.org. You can email news@OhioLinux.org. You'll get in touch with Kevin O'Brien, very stand-up guy, very willing to communicate on anything about Ohio Linux.
Mm-hmm. Yes. We will have more details on that soon. We already talked about it a bit, but we're at the end of the show now, so we're just going to stop.
Yeah.
Cool, Door. So where can we find you?
Panos.com. Bang.
Boom.
That's all there is to it.
Zing, bam, whiz.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, definitely. I, of course, am Cody Cooper. I am currently... you can always contact me on Google+. Email me at cody@podness.com. But more importantly, we're trying to get our schedule full for guests for Podnets and Podnets Daily. So if you yourself are a computer technician, or if you are represent a company or product and would like to come on the show, please email me at cody@podness.com, and I will send you a list of available dates. We have a few good, great guests coming up, one of which was suggested by a listener who is an amazing guy so far, just based on looking at his something that he did, and I'm just going to leave it at that. But got back to me right away, and we're very eager to have him on the show.
Yeah, I'll just say, if you really flourish in your own ADHD, it's going to be a site that you're going to want to know about.
Mm-hmm. My jaw dropped. It's like, how did I know about this before?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, very, very cool. Little teaser there. Okay, so, and as always, of course, if you want to help a great cause by helping someone in our community, please visit the acf.co. That's the Accessible Computing Foundation, run by our good friend and yours, Jonathan T. Nado, Admiral Jonathan T. Nado. I salute you, sir. Bringing accessible technologies to those people who need it, who may have otherwise been left behind, those people with disabilities. Also, you can support his Sonar project, which is a customized spin of Ubuntu for people with accessible needs. But please visit the acf.co. You can become a regular donator for as little as $2 a month, and that money goes toward building some great projects, getting some obstacles out of the way for these people. And he's knocking them down one by one with the support of the community. We've already done quite a bit, but there's a long more way to go, and you can be part of that solution. All right. Well, everyone, that is the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.